I'll do a couple commercials. Because thinking about that song about, you know, doesn't look like Disney World or the Magic Kingdom or, you know, and when you, I mean, it was fun and it's nice and they do a great job, but it's all a facade, really, when you think about it. You know what I mean? It's a great, I mean, it is a magical place. But when you look at, there was like 45,000 people, they say, at every park. I mean, it is insane, in the number of people. But you go to the Lion King and you hear about the circle of life and recycling. You're like, you know, and they don't believe the gospel. I mean, isn't that odd? They make it seem like we're the weirdos. They don't do that. I mean, it was a fun place. It's just, it's a fun place. Anyway, turn to 1 John chapter 4. I'm going to read these. I'm going to read verses 1 through 6. And what we're going to be looking at is, it's kind of funny that these are going to apply to what we're about to do in the next several weeks. How do I say this without sounding... We don't want things to become a witch hunt or, you know, everybody, you know. But we need to test the spirits, okay? And that's what this is about. So let me read it. John just talked to them. Let me read verse 24. And the one who keeps his commandments abides in him, and he in him. And we know by this that he abides in us by the Spirit whom he has given us. Beloved, do not... Verse 1 now. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, of which you have heard that it is coming, and now it is already in the world. You are from God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. They are from the world, therefore they speak as from the world, and the world listens to them. We are from God. He who knows God listens to us. He who is not from God does not listen to us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. So there's essentially what John is saying is, don't believe everybody. Don't believe every spirit, every person that comes and says, I've got this word, a word from the Lord. Let me give you a couple examples. And I'm sure you've seen this in restaurants. Have you ever gone into a... I think Chick-fil-A does this all the time. And giving them a $20 bill, you ever see what they do with it? They check it. You know, and I think I asked Ben, didn't Ben wear? Yeah. You know, and how many did they find? Have you ever seen that? I mean, they check the $20. What are they checking for? Counterfeit. Is it real or not? They're testing that spirit. I've always kind of wondered what they do if they find one. You know, what would happen if I always get $20 bills from the ATM. That's what you get, right? Yeah, I'm like, what, you know, you handcuffed? Are you? What if they, did he ever find one? I've asked people that. I said, well, what is it, what do you do if you find one? And nobody, they don't check dollar bills, right? I mean, generally, people are not, if you're going to be a counterfeiter, you would want to counterfeit something that has a little more value than a dollar bill, right? I've a couple of kids I've asked, they said they found a couple of them, and they just kind of let the guy go. I don't know if the guy's out handing out $20 counterfeit bills. And I guess counterfeiting is pretty easy nowadays if you get the right paper and a, you know, digital copier and stuff like that. But they're testing this counterfeit. They're seeing if it is real or not real. And I don't know what that blue marker or what the marker does on the dollar bill or the $20 bill. In World War II, The Normandy invasion was like the ultimate secret. You know, they had to keep that invasion secret from everybody, from the Germans. If the Germans found out, you know, that would have been bad. So what the Allies did was they created another like counterfeit that was called Ultimate Fortitude. And I don't know, I got this from Gary Inrig. It was headed by Patton, which is, you know, so this was like a real fake. I mean, this was they put a real general in charge of this fake movement, and they built airplanes and soldiers and tanks and hangars out of wood, paper mache. It was all one big fake to have the Germans think that the invasion was coming in Kali, or however, I don't know how you ever pronounce it, when it was really coming to Normandy. So they created this entire fake counterfeit to get people, and it was so believable, they said Hitler, 2 weeks after the Normandy invasion, was still waiting for the main one. That's how real it was. And this is a quote from, everybody quotes Churchill, so I have to quote Churchill. I listened to it several times, so I might not have every word right, so you can quote me. No. Churchill said, "In a time of war, the truth is so important that it must be protected by a wall of lies." And Gary applied that to, when you think of Satan has a lie protected and surrounded by a wall of truth. You know, that's why John says you have to test the spirits. There is always, you know, when they create a $20 counterfeit bill, they don't have Osama bin Laden on this picture on it. You know, I mean, that would be ridiculous, right? There's some truth. There's always truth on that counterfeit. It always looks just like the real one, except for some lie on it. So that's what John is, that's what we're going to be looking at. John is saying, and it basically has two principles, and they're found in verse 1. "Beloved, do not believe every spirit." So don't take, and we had a friend that when we lived over on Marty that had become a believer. He was graduated from high school, he graduated from high school, he went to a camp, became a believer, he went to college, and he was going to study geology because he wanted to get into the Institute for Creation Research and stuff like that. Well, all of the geologists in college turned him. You know, they said, "Don't believe, that's a lie. You know, there's no such thing as..." You know, they taught him the whole evolution thing. And when we met him, by that time, he considered himself a skeptic. Being skeptical, and that's kind of what John is saying here. Don't believe every spirit. There's a good part of being skeptical, right? Not just being gullible. Not just being... we later, like years... How long ago did you hear from the lady? We tried witnessing to them, and they had a little girl that was Jonathan's age, I think, and they're a very nice couple. Well, about 3 years ago, Diane got a letter from her how the mom had... Oh, I did? It was a great letter. The mom got saved, the girl got saved, and thanked Diane for first talking to them. And so it's not bad to be skeptical. The problem is you got to decide, and that, you know, what's true and what's not true. I used to love magic, you know, until I started reading about Houdini and how, you know, it was into real dark stuff. And so I kind of stopped, and magic is one thing, but illusionism and the spiritism that he got into. But an illusionist makes you kind of, you know that they're tricking you, right? You know this can't, an elephant can't disappear in a room. You know what I mean? And so they're tricking you somehow. And you really can't believe your eyes, right? And that's when, I was telling the girls about this, when you go to Disneyland, so I have to have a Disneyland example. We're on a mission to Mars. And it is, what? Yeah, it's a great ride. It's a great ride. And you go up to it, though. It was pouring rain there, so we were walking right on rides. It was the park was empty now, you know, and everybody's leaving, and we're just walking onto these rides. And there's two kinds of missions to Mars. There's like the medium one, and then the, I forget what they call it, the like crazy one, that they spin you at 35 miles an hour. And so Diana was like, well, I ain't doing that one. So you get into, I mean, and it is real, you know, I mean, they're talking and you're the navigator and the pilot and, you know, it, for kids, this just must be like awesome because, you know, because I'm a little skeptical that I'm not really going to Mars. I learned that right away. I mean, when they opened the door and we were still there, I said, wow, perfect. But there's, you know, you're in this thing and it moves and it leans. I don't know how they make it feel like you're leaning back. I mean, when they raise it up and you're looking straight up into the sky and then it takes off and it shakes and there's visual, there's motion, there's 3D stuff. At the end, I mean, this thing comes flying right through your windshield. I mean, it is. That might be the Star Wars one. There are a lot of them are a lot alike. But the issue is our senses can be deceived, right? I mean, you better not trust them, you know. And our feelings can be deceived. After we did that one, the guy kind of dared me to go on the spinning one. So I went, and I got off, and you are dizzy. I mean, it is. You're spinning sideways. I don't know how they spin you sideways and make you feel, I don't know. The point is, don't believe every spirit. Even in this life, you know, even right, I mean, in the world, I mean, Disneyland and the mission to Mars is there to deceive you, to make you feel like you're in a rocket ship. Think of Satan trying to deceive us. Way bigger issue. He's working against the souls of men. I mean, they're... So John says, don't believe every spirit. And it's the people that come, not just believing a magician. A magician is fun to watch, and the illusion is, you know, card tricks are like amazing, and that's okay. This is spiritual deception. These are people that had come into the church and had... We're believers in this group, and we're around people, and then all of a sudden, they were turning. And John is saying, don't believe them. I mean, they were, and they earlier, remember, he said they came from us, but they were not of us because they didn't stay with us. They didn't really, really understand and believe the gospel. So don't believe every spirit. Be skeptical of things. And then the second thing he says to them is, but test the spirits and see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. So we got to give them a test. It's like the marker on the $20 bill. And how do we examine whether some of these people are right? Gary says, you got to ask the question, what is their source or what is their origin? Where are they getting these ideas? You know, when we start looking up churches... you know, some of them are going to be crossed off kind of like right away. But probably not all of them. Well, hopefully not all of them. might be. I don't know. But I think we got to think about this, you know, and think about what is their origin. I mean, I think that is a great question. And some people, when we went to the... on this vacation thing, they always, it's a timeshare, and they always give you another sales pitch to buy more. And what ends up happening is, Diane says, let's not go, because you always get aggravated, and I do. But because they make me feel stupid. I hate feeling stupid. I've never liked the sharpest tack in the box, and I was never, you know, never an A student. And so when people make me feel kind of dumb, I don't like that. And one of the ways sometimes people will make you feel kind of like you're not as smart as them is, well, modern scholarship now says this, you know. We now have new revelation, or we have new manuscripts, or we found the Gospel of Mark. And they go into this long, and you're like scratching your head going, wow, it sounds true. You know, it sounds real. So they could, you know, and you got to think about, so what is their source? Where are they getting this stuff? And I don't have the time to investigate everybody, neither do you. You know, we're not going to, when we start looking around, we're not going to go, I don't, maybe when we get a couple, we talk to the pastors and say, where are you coming from? And what, you know, this is our, do you understand the grace of God? So what is their origin? The other thing, like an institutional, Gary says, these came from Gary, and institutional authority, like, I usually use a quote from when I do stuff about signage. Well, there's a Harvard study that's, so you know, that always gives it more credibility, right? If you said, well, there's an Eastfield study that says this, which would you, right? I mean, people would go, well, Harvard, they're really smart. And there's cultural authority. What do you, and I'm telling this, I was having flashbacks of this way. Well, it's hard not to have flashbacks of Disney World because it's, you know. But every, I mean, when you go to the Lion King and you go to the, everything is about recycling and, you know, they did a pretty good job of first initially blaming humans. You know, I mean, that's what the, and I'm like, every time I hear them do this, I'm like, I think of Tom Clancy's novel, I forget which one it is, but where there's a whole group of people that think that people are causing the problems of the, destruction of the planet, so they want to get rid of most of them, so they plan on killing like half the population of the world. And I'm like, well, if they blame us, do they understand what they're saying? These are people that, you know, wait a minute. But they, at Disneyland, they do say, we're doing better. It is humans that are now recycling, and we're doing better, and we're learning how to use pesticides better. And we're, but the whole thing, behind the whole thing, is this circle of life, and we're all the same. You know, we're all the monkeys and the kangaroos, and we're all the same. And I'm like, wow. And they're very sincere. You know, these are sincere, believable, honest people. And I'm like, sincerity does not make something true. If I sincerely think that there's no poison in this cup, you know, and Gary gave this great illustration. He said there was a farmer one time, and he had a big watermelon patch, and people were stealing his watermelons. He didn't know who it was. He didn't know what was happening. So he stuck a sign out there and said, for your information, one of these watermelons has been injected with deadly poison. You can figure, or if you want to, you can take a chance on which one it is. Next night, no watermelons are gone. Next night, no watermelons are gone. Third night, there's a sign over his sign that says, there are now 2 watermelons poisoned. You figure out which one. I like that story. But the sincerity of, we don't know which one is poisoned. We don't know. So we need to test. We need, it's because people are sincere, because they have good intentions, because they, John says, you got to test the spirits. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 13. This is an interesting story. Now, Deuteronomy is the second giving of the law, right? I mean, that's what Deuto means, second law. This is the second time they've laid out the law for the nation of Israel. This was after they've been in the wilderness for 40 years. They've wandered around. This is before, before Moses dies, turns over the leadership to Joshua. Moses isn't able to go into the promised land. So he's giving them the law the second time. And he's talking about prophets and people that come it's Deuteronomy chapter 13, verses 1 through 4. If a prophet or a dreamer of dreams arises among you and gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes true, concerning which he spoke to you, saying, let us go after other gods whom you have not known. Let us serve them. You shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is testing you to find out if you will love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your and with all of your soul. You shall follow the Lord your God and fear him. You shall keep his commandments, listen to his voice, serve him, and cling to him. Even if, he says, even if that wonder comes true, there were false prophets, things, and I think this was in one of my apologetics classes. When people, like, has any of you seen the movie about the kid that went to heaven? What is it? How is that movie? Yeah, Heaven is Real. Was it a good movie? Yeah. Okay. The idea is, and this is what Geisler would say, I cannot prove or disprove that kid's experience. You can't say to that kid, no, you didn't see that. Right? I mean, you really, when it comes to it, so, and it might be true. That kid, you know, he might have really seen all that stuff. And that's what Moses is saying in Deuteronomy. If a guy says, watch this, and it comes true, and then he says, well, but this came from another God. The sign is true. His pathway is false. Don't follow him. If anything pulls you away from the Lord your God that teaches you to serve him and him alone. That's what John said earlier. You know, we worship this one God. Don't be pulled away. Don't be pulled away, no matter what sign or wonder. You know, so a sign or wonder doesn't prove something that it's true if it leads you to another God. If it leads us away from the truth of this word. Test that spirit and say, no, it's not true. It's like the marker that the kids put on it. If it's not true, they throw it away. They take that. I don't know what they do with that. I'd like to find out. Ask Ben, will you? Find out what they were supposed to. Huh? He spent it. Yeah, put it in his pocket. And this is all, one of the Raiders of the Lost Ark movies. Remember where they were going to find the chalice, and what's his name, the main actor, goes, he's across that leap of across the chasm, and he reads the thing, and he steps his foot out and lands on the, you know, that comes from Kierkegaard, I think, the blind leap of faith. Christianity is not a blind leap of faith in the dark. It's not just, you know, we have evidence. Gary said, it's not a blind leap in the dark, but a step into the light. Understanding. Another thing at Disney World, they have these singers in the American Heritage thing at Epcot, and everybody says, you got to go hear the singers. You guys love it. I mean, it was really kind of cool. They were all dressed in period costume, and they said, what would happen if our entire world was destroyed and people came back to your city and all they found was a penny? What would they know about your land if they found a penny? And they go through, you know, I don't know, who's on the penny? Is Lincoln on the penny? Yeah, Lincoln's on the penny. And they'd know that, and they'd know we had good leaders. And I'm thinking, E Pluribus Unum, they talked about that. And I'm like, are they going to do something about God? And God we trust? And they did. And I leaned over to Diane and I said, should I yell amen? Just to see what, I mean, I really wanted to, because everybody's like, but it was really good. I mean, they would know something about, why was I telling that? Because there were some interesting, really good, and they said they would know that you had followed God. They didn't say Jesus Christ, or, you know, they would have probably gotten in a little trouble for that, but too bad. Anyway, look at verse 2. So how do we test it? What is the test? What is the test that we got to look at to find out if the Spirit is true? Well, he says in verse 2, by this you know that the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. This is the test that Jesus was a man. He came in the flesh. He was from God. He was the Messiah. Jesus the Christ. He is a Messiah. He's the Messiah that the Jews were looking for. He's a Savior. He's in the flesh. He's fully man. He's fully God. There's so much loaded in this statement. And when we went to seminary and you study a lot of theology, I mean, I looked at this morning, I think Ryrie's theology is about that thick. I think Chafer's theology is about 6 volumes. It's about that long, and it's... They do have the 2... I should have read the abridged. But we got to have good theology because bad theology exists, and I understand that. But in this one little verse, it tells us everything we need to know about who Jesus was. He is the Christ, the Savior. He is in the flesh. It was God became man. He is fully God and fully man. And Gary said, "What? You got to ask the question: why would God do that?" I mean, that's the big problem with Islam is they say God wouldn't have become a man. God would never become a man. You know what you say when they ask that or make that statement? Because they believe in they are like Calvinistics. They really believe in the sovereignty of God. God can do anything. So the question back to them would be, couldn't God become a man if he wanted to? Right? The next question is, why would he do that? Why would God become a man? What? To pay for our sin. To take care of the issue of your sin and my sin. Listening to all that stuff about the circle of life and never dealt with the main issue of life. I'm a sinner. How am I going to get this fixed? God did this to take care of the sin problem. That's all in verse 2. You know that it is the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses says the same thing about Jesus Christ, that agrees with him, that he is the Christ and came in the flesh. That spirit is from God. Now, and I started listing people that I watch sometimes on TVs and I get angry with, you know, and I'm like, I probably shouldn't be on a witch hunt, you know. And when some of these guys appear on Larry King Live and they said, do you really think Jesus is the only way? And they hem and haw. You know, why wouldn't he just say? This came from, where's my note? Again, when John is talking about this, I'm going to read John 14. And when I was in seminary, the guy in our all the seminary guys lived in the, well, not all of them, but a lot of them lived in our neighborhood. And I went over to the one guy's house, and he was getting his doctorate. And I said, what are you going to do your thesis? Or what is that called, a thesis? What is it called? Maybe it is a thesis. A dissertation. What are you going to do your dissertation on? And he said, the toughest verse in the Bible. I'm like, which one is that? It's like, and the one in Ephesians where it said he descended into the lower parts of the earth. And I looked at him and I said, I really thought it was John 14, verse 6. When Jesus said to him, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Why can't somebody on Larry King Live say that? You know, you think Jesus was a great teacher? Yeah, I do. Well, what do you think about this? That's a tough... When you're walking around Disney World with 45,000 people, you know, we would have got thrown out if I would have started, you know, but they need to believe that one truth. there's one way. That's a tough, and whenever you listen to Ravi Zacharias and he said, oh, how can you believe something that's so exclusive? Like, well, truth is exclusive. That's the very nature of what truth is. It's very exclusive. Every religion is. You know, I think Buddha started Buddhism because he didn't like the caste system of Hinduism. So he threw out the caste. Well, so you could be a Buddhist and a Hindu. Well, you can't. You really can't. Because both of them are exclusive. Anyway, when I really think when John wrote his chapter, verse 2 of this chapter, he's harking back to what happened in that upper room again. When Jesus says, let not your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. But I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way I am going. Think of John remembering this night. And Thomas, the only one that's willing to speak up. Well, Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How do we know the way? Jesus said to him, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. And if you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you know him and have seen him. Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough for us. Maybe they weren't the smartest tack in the box either, you know. Think of Jesus quietly looking at him and saying, Jesus said to him, have I been with you? And yet you have not come to know me, Philip. He who has seen me has seen the Father. How do you say, show us the Father? Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? And the words that I say to you, I do not speak on my own initiative, but the Father abiding in me does his work. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father in me. Otherwise, believe on account of the works themselves. So that's the test. When we look at this, the test is, do they understand who Jesus really is? Is all of their theology based on him? Because once you've seen him, you've seen the Father. When we sang that song about Isaiah looking at the throne of his garment, filled the throne room with glory. I mean, we now have seen the Father. That's the test. And then John goes in verse 3, and every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, of which you have heard that it is coming, and now it is already in the world. Understanding that there's truth, Satan is going to come out after it with a bunch of lies and surround it with little bits of truth. Get real close. If Satan can get people really close and not just making that jump to believing who his son really is. And then let me just read. There's three words. He kind of jumps to three different people at the end of this. In verse 4, he talks about you. In verse 5, he talks about they of the world. And then it talks about we. Most people think he's talking about the apostles. So he says to his readers, you are from God, little children, and have overcome them. For greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. So many times, it's a pretty simple statement. We just gotta believe it. Greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. It can't ever be Satan made me do it. Sometimes I just guess I don't believe that. And And Paul and John is saying, understand, understand, you are from God, little children. For greater is he that is in you than he that's in the world. When you come up against a tough, just, I mean, I think there's times when people have asked me questions and God, you know, I don't have all the answers. I mean, when I listen to Ravi Zacharias and I hear the questions he gets, and I'm like, whoa, and he just rolls off of his tongue these answers, and I'm like, I really think that that might be more of God than Ravi Zacharias. Greater is he that is in Ravi than is he that is in the world, or in Diane, or John, or me. And then he talks about the Antichrist. They are from the world. Therefore, they speak as from the world, and the world listens to them. You know, I mean, I don't know. When people have their ears tickled, when you tell them what they want to hear, you know, you can be healthy, wealthy, the whole prosperity thing. I mean, I remember seeing one of those guys on TV. He had he gave a tour of his house. I want to be careful. I want to be, but a 15,000 square foot house for a pastor is probably a little big, little bit. You know, and I want to be a little careful because I might have a bigger house than you. You know what I mean? And you might think maybe 21,000 is too big. So I think you want 2,100. We didn't tell them about the big one. 2,100. But if the world's listening and it sounds like the world, we better be careful. We better be careful. And then the last verse, John writes, we are from God. Most people think he's talking about the apostles because he said that in the beginning. What we saw, what we felt, what we heard from the beginning, we taught to you. And he's referring back to that. We are from God. He who knows God listens to us. He who is not from God does not listen to us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. There's two, you have, and I think that's maybe why people don't kind of get a little uptight with Christianity. It is a little black and white. It's either true or false. You either got to believe it or don't believe it. You either believe he is God, came from him, died for your sin, resurrected, put your trust in him, or don't believe it. The gospel is either true or false. There's either a spirit of truth or a spirit of error. And I, you know, I wish, I don't know why I'm thinking about it, but when we were walking around Disneyland, there was a lady that had I Love Jesus on her t-shirt, and I said, nice t-shirt. I also, right after that, I saw a guy with a Chicago Bears, and I said, go Bears. So it was like, Diane said, why are you noticing t-shirts? But, and we had a great time. We had a great, and it's a great vacation. But it's not as great as the gospel. It's not as great as in this little room filled with God's glory on each one of our faces. Let's pray together. Father, as we, again, walk through this life, you've given us, you know, you've given us our lives. You've given us the truth of your gospel. You have saved our souls through your Son. Father, as we walk through from this place, as we go to our jobs, our schools, or wherever it is, the people we meet, Father, I pray that you would allow them to see something of your goodness and grace, of your love and care for them through us. Father, and if give us opportunities to talk about who you are. Not be troubled that we might not know all the answers, not be troubled by what people may think, whether they like us or not, but that they would come to love you and not love you and love you because you first loved us. We thank you for your word and your son, and for that we can have a relationship with you. The likes of us can know the living God. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen.